This is the April 27 edition of Commodity Week. The United States Department of Agriculture announced the largest one-day sale of corn since 1991, and the size of the soybean crop in South America keeps getting smaller. We'll find out what it might mean for American farmers today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio today include from ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois, Paul Cooley, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, and grain analyst Dan Zwicker from Decatur, Illinois.
Support for Commodity Week comes from Agrigold Hybrids, featuring the Agrigold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at agrigoldgiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media produced at the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. You can always find us online at WILLAG.org. Let's start out with this question. Dan Zwicker, that one-day sale that was the largest since 1991, how important might it be to the marketplace?
Well, I think you can see the way the market responded today. This has been in the works for the last several weeks. We've had premium basis levels, cash prices above futures, and when you're short futures and the basis is above the futures level, you got to be awful careful. And this is what we saw here today is in the explosion of old crop futures gravitating up to close that distance of that premium.
Wayne Nelson?
Well, you just look at the May-July spreads on both the corn and the beans today, Todd. We widened that spread on out another 10, 11 cents in the corn, and we widened another 3 or 4 cents in the beans. We're seeing, like you say, it's delivery day starts on Monday, and we are seeing the commercials wanting to push that on out because they'd like to take delivery of some of this grain.
And Paul Cooley.
Well, the bottom line is the Chinese needed to buy a lot of corn, and they've been aggressively buying soybeans. Yes, there was too much difference between the cash and futures, and the scare of deliveries meant that May futures contract was way too cheap and the market exploded. It's good news for old crop corn and old crop soybeans, the bottom line.
Taking a look at the numbers as they finished up in Chicago for the corn pit nearby May contract, a 655.5 top, the low at $6.09¾. Settlement price up 40.5 cents on the week in the May at 6.53. December, on the other hand, just a 2 cent gain to settle at $5.38¾. Remember, we give you the overnight and the day trade, the open outcry and the electronic, and it's a Friday to Friday close, so 40.5 cents higher in the May, and December up just 2 cents. There's a big spread in there. What do you think of it?
Well, I think what it is a reaction to, the grain trade got overly bearish after the April supply-demand tables came out and did not reflect the disappearance rate that actually what the grain stocks reported on the 31st of or the 30th of March. And, the way we're using grain, the disappearance rate is closer. Ending stocks was probably closer to 550 million bushels rather than what USJ was using at 800. So the market was disappointed. You saw a collapse in old crop futures at that point in time. And I think what you're seeing now is a realization that that was kind of a bear trap. We're going to have to ration some old crop inventories. There's no doubt about it that the early planting is going to allow for some bigger supplies to come into the market, but we got a long ways to go before those inventories are there.
Paul, Dan says we're using it at a big pace instead of 801. Sterling, I'm going to make an assumption it was Sterling Liddell at Rabobank who came out with the 650 earlier in the day on Friday. Dan's down at 550. What do you think?
Well, Dan hit a triple there with what he said, and what the rest of the story is that that we have this big acreage of corn that's going to be planted, and it's going to be harvested rather early, and new crop corn trumped old crop corn until we realized that, you know, ethanol and this big China export deal. And once again, old crop corn is leading the parade. And we have to take note that it's going to make things extremely difficult for the grain users to basically coast into new crop. But between that time frame and new crop, it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, a lot of fun. Corn. So now we've got, let me think about it. Say we've got 550 left. We've got an early planting season. We moved that up, 3 weeks maybe? So we're at least September 1, maybe the last week of October. But you still have to make the transition at some point. The volatility could be fun in, I suppose, July and August.
Well, Paul Cooley's been saying, if you listen to him on Wednesday, Todd, that old crop corn is tight and new crop corn is very plentiful. And the trend of when there's plentiful is down, and when it's tight is up, and the trend should be your friend, as Paul Cooley would say. And he's been right again.
For 27 years.
One more time, Paul's been right.
Wait, how many years has he been right? Paul's retiring. So you've got 40, how many years in, Paul?
43, I think.
43 years, and the trends are friends.
This program is still very refreshing and fun, and I have a lot of fun with my colleagues here a little bit. But the thing that they are missing here is that just because we have harvesting corn going on September 1st, you better be alert on demand, and the Chinese basically outfoxed the market one more time.
You think that's right? They did the job?
Well, there's no doubt about it. There's a lot of export interest, and as China shows more interest in buying exports, that encourages other countries to buy because it's just kind of dominoing. And we've seen a tremendous uptick in export activity. It just kind of exploded. The whole character, as Paul mentioned, the whole character of the market changed here the last couple of days, where all of a sudden the front-end beans and the front-end corn took off like rockets. And that's a major character change. And that's telling you that the demand for old crop inventory is getting tighter. And of course, you know, we all know we're off to an early start, but we don't have any weather premium in new crop. And see, we may get an early harvest, but a lot of that southern harvested crop may end up going to exports, and there's nothing up north here. So it's going to be a tricky season. I was visiting today with a lot of traders. What happens on the June 30th report if it shows that our disappearance rate is way faster than what the USDA has been expecting? We could find ourselves in a situation where the market has to spike in July on old crop inventory. So it's going to be a very interesting, active summer. And as we kind of reminisce a little bit about old times, I mean, Paul was in the business when you came to work and just watched the market go dot for about several days in a row.
I thought you were going to tell us when dirt was invented.
But. No, but I'd like to have Paul kind of reminisce a little bit about those days.
I wasn't going to go back with the dot, so that we really didn't trade. But when you look back over the years, what was like this? I mean, are there years where suddenly we've got a, it doesn't have to be at this time frame of the year, but where we had a crop in the ground getting ready to come out and emerge, and old crop suddenly took back over the lead? Because by default, new crop should be the lead because of weather at this time.
Well, I also wanted to reminisce a little bit. My favorite weatherman called me and said, hey, congratulations on retiring. But he says, I want to just remind you this, Cooley, it's the most perfect weather forecast around the world that you could ever believe, and particularly in the U.S., a bountiful water in the wheat country and also rain in the nick of time for the Corn Belt and things like that, and a nice 1 to 2 inch rain over the next 5 to 7 days. But the big thing that's caught everybody's attention is this extremely tight carryover. And also, my pals forgot to mention that $15 bid on old crop beans. If that wasn't a eye-opener today, it did catch everybody's attention, and nobody really wanted to get caught being short the wrong commodity.
Oh, and by the way, before you leave tonight, I want the phone number of your private meteorologist.
Yeah, we all do.
Well, it only works, as I was one time standing on an oil rig one time, and they were drilling for oil, and there was a Geiger counter there, and he said, don't get that. That's only when you have a dry hole.
Okay, corn. Beans, $15.09. You made note of that. $14.33 on the high in the May. Settlement price there was 50 cents higher at $14.96¾. Again, November, $13.62, just a 6 cents range, 6 cents higher on the week. Can you, Dan, take us through both the corn and soybeans and technically how things in the front months have changed for you this week?
Well, I think the closings, the gain for the week tells you the story, that the market switched from being new crop kind of driven with the acreage battle that we saw released after the March 30th report. Everybody was surprised how large the corn acre was and how short the bean acres were. So everybody went in and just bought beans, sold corn on the corn-soybean ratio, and that's been kind of the leader up until this past week. So it just kind of flipped, and that's why we don't have much gains in the new crop. It all went into the old crop. And chart-wise, the beans have been the best performer all along. I mean, they have stayed entrenched in an uptrending channel since those Christmas lows and really have never looked back. Corn has been more of a struggle because of back in early January, it looked like we had more corn than what we thought, and then all of a sudden, nobody could buy any. The basis started getting stronger, it's had a little more volatility in it.
Wayne, on the day Friday, corn, obviously the leader, maybe on the week as well, up 40.5 compared to 50 in the beans. But the beans have been the leader for quite a while. Will they take that role again?
Will the corn take over the beans?
Will the beans take back the leadership, or is the corn in that driver's seat at this point, in your opinion?
I think the beans are still in the driver's seat, Todd. We're hearing, continuing every week, we see a decrease in the South American crop. We have seen bean meal take over now as the leader. That is always the leader that drives the bean market, and it has seemed to have taken over here. We are seeing countries come to the U.S. for bean meal that generally buy out of Argentina. Argentina is short of bean meal here, of course, with their crop going down, 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 and as things are going along that way. So I think the beans are still in the driver's seat right now. It's easier to move beans a dollar than it is corn 50 cents. And I think as we get up here more, we are going to have more of a diversion of using some wheat, which we've got a very good wheat crop coming on. And I think the Southeast has commented there, going to go down in that area where feed is and use a little more wheat and figure it on in if they can, especially get back close to $7 cash on the corn. The meal, not a lot of substitutes there.
Follow the bean meal for just a bit for me, because this is something I think probably important to understand. You can tell me if I'm wrong. New contract ties keep being made in the bean meal. Argentina's primary export is not soybeans, but bean meal, if I remember correctly.
They process most of their exports,
right?
Yes.
And most of those go to China. So China then turns to the United States. Is that right?
That's going to be probably where they're looking. I mean, they like to look other places first, but the reliable quality supplier is still the U.S.
Informa came out early this afternoon with a 40 million ton bean crop, and we all thought the later bean plants got the rains and improved the yields, and the arithmetic just isn't coming in. The crop scouts say it's not there, and I think that sent an alarm to the cash trade that things aren't good in Argentina. There could be more acres planted here as far as beans are concerned. We know that arithmetic. There was 2 million less row crop, 2 million acres of wheat that aren't accounted for, but the rest of the story on this old crop corn and old crop bean strength, that if the marketplace catches a weather problem, we could see a price move in the new crop corn and new crop beans that will surprise the marketplace. And of course, that's a fear. We still have this big acreage coming in and maybe a bigger acreage in beans, but the arithmetic is that that pent-up demand could also mean some pent-up demand on new crop corn and beans.
All right, so let me pull all of you very quickly. So for old crop, and I think this is probably easy, everybody's friendly to bullish old crop corn and soybeans?
I think you have to, at least for the next 30 days anyway.
Cautiously bullish.
And these old crop beans could go a lot higher than $15.
Yeah, and then the trickier part is what to do with new crop, and is that mostly weather-driven or?
The farmer that we talked to is willing to sell some new crop beans at $14, and I do think the new crop corn has to be pushed along a little bit, because I do think the war cry I hear from everybody is they are planting a lot of corn acres in the Midwest.
I agree. I think $14 is the next time farmers sell new crop beans. If we could get back over $5.50 in the Deese corn, we'll start to see some sales, but then they'll be held up a few more at $5.75. But what they really want is $6.
Yep.
And you're multiplying corn by three, right?
That's what you said Thursday.
Yes, yeah, I am.
So $18 beans.
I'm a big advocate of the corn soybean ratio. Yeah. We're pulling out of that 5-year cycle low that was posted here during the winter months, and I think over time we're going to go to 3.2 to 1. Now that could be, you know, $3 corn and $10 beans, or that could be $4 corn and $12 beans.
You all didn't see Wayne.
But I think that the traders are going to work that spread. I think that's the hottest thing on the board of trade. You can really see the activity in that trade. It's going to be volatile. Everybody's going to be a Denver Bronco fan this summer because it's going to buck all the way, I think, to September.
Okay, Paul. Your time. What do you want to take up? What do you want to reminisce about today on your last run through Commodity Week?
One of the most interesting deals is that I started out as a commodity broker in 1971, and it seemed like we had some 85 and 90 cent corn at the Board of Trade. And I knew farmers, and when you talk to them, you basically knew that there wasn't much speculative money out there, so I wanted to get in the cash grain business, and that's when I started with Tabor Grain. And at the end of that, the first season crop, you know, bean yields were good, and we had this big mysterious buying come in by Russia, by Cook Industries. They bought 1 million tons of beans at the Board of Trade just basically in one day, and we saw the making of a new grain industry that I've never looked back, and it was the most exciting time in the world when we did see the big Russian grain robbery.
So that was the genesis of the new
era in processing, exporting, and the new era of the Chicago marketplace.
And then other big items that changed the way the trade or agriculture has worked in your time?
Well, of course, the one thing that I can always remember, the next step, was when the Hunt brothers started to do this program trading, in which they'd all have four brokers call up and buy beans all at the same time, and they took delivery.
Is that what they call program trading?
7 million bushels of beans. And it just so happened that we went to lunch, and I got a phone call after lunch, and a reliable source indicated that the president of Cargill called the rent-a-train south of Effingham that was full of soybeans, and they stopped it in the middle of the tracks and told them to put it in reverse to Burns Harbor in Chicago. In the meantime, the president of Cargill called the Illinois Central Railroad, and they all made the necessary switches. And the story was they even put the Panama Limited on a passing track for those carload of beans going to Chicago. It was monumental because Cargill ran Burns Harbor 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to make those deliveries. They shut all their processing plants down in North America. They moved employees from all their plants up there to make delivery. And that was a big monumental deal, and I remember that just like it was yesterday.
And then there are lots of things within the history of ADM and how it's impacted the,
yeah,
the global
economy.
Yeah,
one of the ones that we remember probably the best was the time that Gorbachev took over. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Andreas and Mr. Kraft went over to Russia. And the story is they flew over Chernobyl. And they basically made a sale of soybeans of about, I think it was about 1.2 million metric tons. And the price of beans were below loan price. And that changed the way things were done. And as the story goes, they did have an actual meeting with Gorbachev and supper with him. And they explained to him the big, you know, opportunity of using soybeans to improve their diet. And it did change the way, you know, from then on, we never had a surplus of soybeans in the United States.
Decatur was the center of a lot of change in democracy, I think, across the planet. And I'll add to that story just a bit. After the fall of the Soviet Union, and so this probably lends credence that, yeah, they had dinner with Mr. Gorbachev. He flew in on the plane, the capitalist tool, and he was on this was in May, and he made a speech there in Decatur, and I was a young reporter at the time, and his wife was there, Raisa, and he stood there, and they did not get this done, but there is a nice statue of Ronald Reagan there on the ADM grounds, and he suggested that there would be a statue of Mr. Gorbachev, too. I don't think that that's happened, but ADM's been just a huge part of your life and a big part of our agricultural life.
Well, of course, the ethanol's been a wonderful part of the tool, and it sure helped the farm prices and, you know, made agriculture change. And, of course, the other thing that we have to talk about from these other people is, of course, we did see the big hedge funds come in, and that's changed things considerably.
Well, Todd, I'd just like to say that the first time I ever worked in a commodity office or trading office, when I was a trainee with Tabor Grain, and I went to Danville, Illinois, and worked with Paul Cooley for a week when Ron Lash was on vacation. So it's Paul's fault that he got me started in this trading endeavor like that. Many years ago, we were watching a big click, a tote board on the wall, going click, 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 and every now and then when one would stick, Paul would have to run up and spray some silicone in the little thing to make it work better again. And when the noise got loud, we knew we needed to start calling people in a hurry.
It's been a lot of fun. And your impact, Paul, on the region, on WILL, on the ag programming here is greater than you might imagine. I know you sat down with Charlie Lindy and you laid out what you thought might work. And I don't know how you came, but I do know how you came up with it because you're thinking all the time about what might be new. But I don't know how much Charlie changed what you expected to be on the air.
Charlie was extremely professional, and he was very interested in changing things. And after we started doing things, it was very logical, and it just, you know, changed a great deal. And of course, you covered a lot of those things at the Market Outlook meeting, you know, about talking on a particular day about the gas, and we had private weather people.
Right.
We had cash grain reports. We had, you know, the pre-calls, and then we had the all-day outlook meetings, and then the idea of going out in the countryside and having meetings with the farmers all added up. And, of course, the big thing is it really kept the commodity broker sharp because we got new ideas, we got good questions, and it was just a lot of fun. We talked to some Secretaries of Agriculture. We talked to people in the major grain companies. And as you say, it was an exciting experience to be listening and talking to Dick Ling, for example.
Yeah, well, on Commodity Week, we have had some really fantastic guests, or some really big names over the year. Dick Ling, of course, was Secretary of Agriculture.
Earl Butts.
Yeah. And it's just been exciting to be part of the programs. And I can't tell you how much it's meant to me to be your friend and to be—
Well, thank you very much.
To learn from you over the years, Paul. It's been fantastic to be under your wing part of the time. And you've meant so much to me and you've meant so much to the station. I really, really do thank you for all of that. What are, in your office in Oakland, what are the most memorable things that have happened there. It's a grain elevator first, so there's got to be things that are unique that have happened in Oakland.
Well, we can remember how the market traded, you know, when the Falkland Islands, you know, and we remember after, we got news reports on that, and we were about the the Russian vessel in Argentina, and there was a
Gorbachev assassination,
you know, things like that. So, you know, also we
things
were there
were
when, when major crop production reports and really the big thing that's probably changed the way we really do things the most is the 24-hour-a-day trading and more of the big hedge funds playing. And, you know, Dan, you probably that's one of your interesting points, too.
Well, the next big move that is actually taking place today is Twitter. People are getting instantaneously information out of the corn pits of Chicago, all over the world on these little Twitter feeds. So I remember yesterday at your reception, you were talking about subscribing to the Chicago Tribune and the Wall Street Journal, how that got into the grain trading business as far as news goes. Now today, with the smartphone and these Twitter feeds, it is going to change, I think, the market and the information, the way information moves across the grain industry.
You know, one of the things I can remember most is the yield monitors on the combines. You know, we had a really instantaneous way, and what we found is three yield monitors, go, so goes Iowa, three yield monitors, so goes the Illinois crop. And one of the things we learned, too, is that there is a big difference between what happens in Iowa and Illinois, Todd, you know, as far as that's concerned.
How many phone calls do you make in a day, outgoing?
Oh, gee, I would say 100.
Because when people ask, I've always said you have the best information of any of the analysts that we have on the air, generally speaking. And then I follow that up with, because I think he makes more phone calls than anybody else outgoing and trying to gather up information.
One of the things we first did in Danville, I had just one phone on this, and I had a customer that was a pretty big customer, and I said, I got to get another phone because I got to be talking to him, writing orders down and putting them into Chicago. And one of the vice presidents came over, and lo and behold, I think everybody in the company got two phones on their desk because it did speed up things quite a bit. So it was one of our trademarks, two phones on every desk.
The two-phone office. And how many phones do you have on your desk?
I have two phones, yeah. And everybody in the office there has got two phones on their desk. So, you know, it's a trademark, and it's something that I think they have two phones on their desk, too, don't they, Dan?
12, two phones and five monitors, so.
Always trying to figure out what's happening in the marketplace and how things are going to work out, I take it. Well, Wayne and Dan and Paul, thank you so much for being here for this last
tip of the hat to the station in Utah.
Thank you so much. Any final word from you? No? Okay. We'll leave it at that. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. And Dan Zwicker out of Decatur, Illinois, where he serves as a grain analyst. That is this April the 27th edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason.